Conclusion and in its acting chairperson for the meeting. The chairperson is running a bit late and she has things in ecology and she will be joining us shortly. Can I ask from the members nominations for acting chair in terms of rule 150?
Please have Balor.
I recognize the member. Is there a second for that nomination? Are there any objections or is there a second nomination? No, there is none. Honorable Silverman, would you please like to say?
I think we can start this meeting with prayer. We'll ask anyone in the audience to do a sort of prayer.
Thank you, Jesus. Dear Lord, I ask you to give guidance and wisdom to each and every person in this room today. I ask you to give help and put your hand over each person as we share their information. I also ask that you bless all those people out there today that have far less than we do, Lord, and that suffered last night from cold and hunger. And I ask that our thoughts are with them during our session this morning. Amen.
Thank you, Honorable
Elizabeth,
for the prayer. I think we can start now. The normal procedure. Apologies. Honorable William, apologize. Okay, the Honorable Chairperson will be late. Okay, thank you. Right, I think we will start. Okay, Honorable.
Rather apology, I just wish to point out that it's only 20 minutes. After 10 o'clock, the meeting is scheduled to start at 10 o'clock, not 10:19. And we're inconveniencing a lot of people who took a great deal of trouble and expense to be here on time to present to this committee. I think the least we, as parliamentarians, can do is to make sure that we're here on time to actually stop up with to the minister as well, who's also here, attending our committee meeting, and all the other people who come from Pretoria and elsewhere. So I wish to lodge my objection to the poor performance of fellow MPs on this committee, and I think we should set an example if we want to hold the government to account. We should start with our job.
Yeah. Your concern has been noted, Honourable Member, but I do believe that the problem, we were all early here this morning, but we were outside there and we couldn't enter the room. The TV crew was busy there.
Some of us could enter. No, that's not acceptable. Some of us could enter.
Okay, we can proceed now. Because we have 4 points on the agenda, we're going to start first with number two, the briefing by the State Information Technology Agency, SITA, on their strategic plan and budget. We've got here Chairperson Ms. Wafa Anata. I'll hand over to you immediately.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm not Brother Manasse. I am Richard Baloyi, the Minister of Public Service and Administration. I'm leading the two entities that will be briefing the portfolio committee today, and that is FISA and Palama. And now that Palama is the first to present, FISA is the first to present. Let me indicate, and I'll also talk about Palama because I'll have to be excused something. Let me indicate that the State Information Technology Agency, FISA, was established in terms of an Act of Parliament. As an entity that exists on its own, run through under the leadership of the board and also the executive. It is a state entity that is having a relationship with the government as a sole shareholder. So through the Minister of Public Service and Administration, the state as the shareholder is the political authority on issues related to FITA. Then the minister appoints accordingly, as provided in the FITA Act, a board that has to oversee the day-to-day activities of FITA as an entity. They are going to present a report in briefing the portfolio committee, as you have indicated, Chairperson. But I think it is necessary, as I introduce them, it's necessary for me to indicate in some of the issues that will not be part of the strategic planning presentation. But for the strategic plan to succeed, you actually need a conducive environment as any organization. So as a shareholder, I would like to then indicate that there are priorities in terms of actually getting a FITA on course. You will remember that we have the acting chief executive officer who has taken over from another acting chief executive officer. We have taken over from another acting chief executive officer. We have to talk about these things because these are things that I have published today. We are leading the process to make sure that, as you might have seen adverts or out in the papers, to make sure that we appoint a permanent chief executive officer, we can assure the portfolio committee that in no time that will be realized. Because I think that they have closed already. So the process of making it, yeah. Oh, you have it. Oh, that's good. So having said that, let me indicate that as a shareholder, we are confident that although as an acting capacity, of course with a board that is also slightly depleted, We are confident that we have men and women who are ready to soil their hands to make sure that FITA is kept afloat, FITA is on board, focused in terms of the mandate that they are actually going to deliver. We, from time to time, have shareholder compact, and this is an instrument through which we hold FITA accountable for their activities. So having said this, Chairperson, let me indicate, as you have said, that we have the Chairperson of the board who is a very experienced person, more especially on FITA issues. Some say she has been around. Her name is Godla Manasse. The executive is represented by Femke Pinar, and also Ramavene Magoma and Peter. They are going to lead the presentation. If I will still be around at that stage, I will come in at the end to also give some closing remarks. But let me also introduce Palama in advance, because like I said, Mr. Chairperson, if I get a permission, I will ask to leave earlier. But you see, Parliament may decide through the portfolio committee that no minister don't go. I wouldn't have a problem. But if I'm allowed to leave, when Palama comes in, I will not be in by that time. Palama is an acronym for Public Administration Leadership and Management Development Academy. It's a new name for what used to be called SAMDI, South African Management Development Institute. Their responsibility is to provide training intervention so as to capacitate our public servants so that it must be able to deliver in terms of its mandate. They do that right from entry level. I think they will indicate when they do their presentation that they have what they call Multiplied Investing Program, which is a program of orientating new entrants in our public service. So that when the people come into the public service, they come there, they then know as to what is it that is expected of them, what are the policies, what is the culture in our public service, when we say what it is, exactly what is it that we mean, and how do we actually coordinate between the three spheres of government, so that when they come in, they know exactly and they are ready. But also it does not end up there. Palama also has a program, advanced program for further training that allow our public servants to be on course in terms of what is expected of them to deliver in terms of the mandate. They will also present their report in terms of the strategic plan. I thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. I would like to send my apologies to you for not introducing you in the beginning.
No, don't worry.
In the same breath, I would like now to welcome the Honorable Deputy Minister join us now, Kelly Eti, to this meeting. You are most welcome, yes, sir.
Thank you. If I may be out of order again, Palama is led by the Director General, Dr. Mark Hawkins. He's sitting there. And DDGs, Wichabelo Maja, and Rufus Montana, Mandisa Manjesi, and the branch head, Saria Arendt and Carlo Fender. So that is the team. Thank you very much. And of course, the Deputy Minister is the right. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, for the introduction there. Honorable Member.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity. I'd just like to respond to briefly to what the Minister said, especially in the light that we may be leaving in the course of the presentation and we might not have an opportunity to respond at the end of the presentation when we may see from. Just to express my satisfaction to see you here, Minister. I served for 4 years in Parliament in the previous term, and not once have I seen a Minister come to a portfolio committee in those previous 4 years. Mm. And that's wrong. And this is a breath of fresh air, and I'm very happy to see you. That's the way it should be, and I hope that we'll see much more of you in future committee meetings, and looking forward to productive interaction with you as well as with the Deputy Minister. So I'm just kind of saying thank you that the Minister is here, and that we're doing the right way in this committee. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I do believe permission is granted, Honourable Minister. I know you have a lot of work to do. You do understand that. Thank you for coming here. Okay. I would like to ask the presenters now, due to time, okay, to cut the little that you want to speak to the issues, and we can afterwards maybe be able to ask questions. Thank you. Over to you, Dr. Martin.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. As the Minister has said, the team that is going to present, we have an agenda in front of us. Some of the now is going to take us through the background of PISA and will take us through the strategic imperatives, which include the operational efficiency of PISA, the improved service delivery, customer and stakeholder satisfaction, as well as financial sustainability. We will also take the House through the budget of the 2009-2010. Because of the time, I will not waste any time, but I will hand over to Sanchez, who will try to summarize and make sure that we do not waste your time.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of Portfolio Committee. As indicated, we'll try our best to go through the presentation as quick as we can. The points that we're going to look at this morning is the background, strategic imperative, and FEMCA will take over the budget for 2009 and 2010. In the background, where it all started, as the Minister has mentioned, CITA is in the Act of Parliament, As a result of a merger in 1999 of InfoPlan, Central Computer Services, and South African Police Services, ITIS, which is Information Systems and Information Management Services. The objective of CICA Act is actually more in Section 6 of the Act, which says CICA has to provide information technology, provide information systems, provide ICT-related services. I'm losing you. Provide ICT-related services in a maintained information system security environment, and to act as an agent of South African government. In our strategic focus, we looked at it to say, as a three-year strategic plan, what it is that we need to look at, especially in 2009-10, as the year that we've defined of the imperatives that we actually want to achieve. We said the focus for this financial year is actually to really go back to basics in the sense of what the intention of the mandate was from the beginning, which is to provide the mandated services. Let's go back to it and make sure that we excel and do so much better around it. And also, building operating capability and capacity to support the ICT requirements of government, in that, contributing to improved service delivery as the mandate says. And also, as the mandate of CICA, we are guided by certain principles. With those principles goes as follows, as in the screen. In order for us to deliver on the top roof, which is the red area in the diagram, we talk of being able to reduce the way of doing business, and especially more from a cost point of view, improving productivity, and citizens being able to experience the way in which we allow government to do business. We need to build on a common government ICT architecture, which is really complying with the following principle, which in the middle of the five pillars there, talks first one, first principle being to reduce duplication across government sector level, ensure economics of scale, improve system security, ensure interoperability of systems, and introduce the ACRs into ICTs. And I think if we recall, as part of the State of the Nation address, this point, the last pillar or the principle there, was specifically mentioned in a way of saying it's about time that agencies of government, we begin to support the BEE, SMMEs, and induce the local economic development into provincial in respect of ICTs. And that also includes CICA in the process. How is CICA constituted from a structural point of view? I think the minister has already alluded to this. I'll just quickly run through it. CICA is governed by a board of directors and has the chief executive officer, which the position at the moment is vacant. And it does have six executives, which the first one is the chief financial officer, the second chief of business operations, and followed by the chief information officer within CICA, and the chief of tech services, chief strategic services, and the chief regulatory affairs and procurement. That is the leadership and the management team of CICA. Our service portfolio. CICA provides a broad spectrum of IT services, which are structured under the following categories. I will start with the second one, which I think is actually our portfolio that we're sending out to outline. Infrastructure services, hosting a data center, business portfolio management, service management centers, professional services, procurement services, service management centers, training, research and development. Every year, as an organization, we go all out to run a customer survey, which in turn will begin to tell us where we are doing well, where we are not doing well, what it is that we need to do to improve going forward. In addition to that customer survey, we also run parallel the stakeholder analysis, which also begin to indicate to us the areas that we need to improve on. In the past financial year, we've highlighted those important that we believe may be critical that we share with this committee. The highlight of the finding says, the first one, we lack of fully executed IT service management framework, questionable quality and pricing of services, perceived overcharging on the mandatory components of the service, which is maybe due to the monopoly services that we are, because government is the only client that we are having. Challenges in service level agreement, capacity constraints as with the rest of the industry, which we know across the board that is the problem, possible business continuity issues, the perceived lengthy procurement lifecycle, timely submission of correct and accurate invoices. These are the highlighted out of all those that were mentioned to say probably these are the areas that as an organization, through our strategic focus of 2009 and 10, we have to make sure that we turn that area around as quick as possible. CSAP's contribution to government program of action. We here to provide ICT connectivity and remote support by leveraging of the next generation network that CICA has built. The creation of an IT blueprint that guides the development of ICT to local government and citizen center. Deploying a shared services platform that will be used to support ICTs deployed within these communities. Establishing an open source program office that will create an open source laboratory and a roadmap for the open source in government. Contributing to the development of Catalyst Next Generation e-government prototype, developing the framework of a new ERP system in government, developing a government-wide enterprise architecture framework, developing a framework for adopting a service-oriented architecture. In this case, we will be supporting actually the principles that I talked of earlier on, which is interoperability, reusability of the system and application, and also sharing of ICTs across the sector, which in turn we believe this will facilitate value for money in ICT procurement. Our strategic imperative as defined. The first one, we are actually concentrating in client relationship building, and that's one area that we believe we need to perfect as the outcome of our customer survey. Optimize information communication technology, infrastructure and services, modernize public service operations, develop our people, achieve operational excellence, reduce the cost, extend our service footprint, and improve financial sustainability. In the next slide, we actually went more into, out of the 8 imperatives that we just listed, what it is that we mean out of each of those, what it is that we're going to do. In the first key initiative, which imperative number 1 being optimized information, communication and technology, we looked at the development of a detailed service catalog that clearly defines each of CITA's service offerings. And I'm pleased to actually can say the service catalog is already at the moment being developed. We're just looking at optimizing and identifying cost efficiency initiatives that we can actually look at in this financial year. Under that as well, we're looking at increasing utilization of to improve cost efficiency, develop new value-added offerings, e.g. the voice over IP, which we can also say that has already implemented more so a pilot in the Department of Labor. LAN and desktop support, which we've already defined, and already the DRP, which is also defined as an offering that we are taking to our clients. Develop and implement security framework. We're working closely in this case with the Office of the Government CIO in order to plan and define how to implement that going forward. In the next, we looked at the implementation of the green strategy, which we can also say today, we've defined and developed our own internal CICA green strategy and is in place. The second imperative being modernized public service. In this case, we are looking at optimizing and automating departmental core processes. In this case as well, I would like to mention that we're working closely with the Office of the Government CIO in setting direction, policy and management and money, the implementation going forward of what it is that CICA would concentrate on in the next financial year or some in this financial year after conclusion. Digitized paper documentation, e-payments, which in this case we're looking at the improvement of payment processing, invoicing and administration to reduce cash transactions, and also the e-government, m-government, and government-wide collaboration, the IFMS as the program that we are running. In the main three, which is e-government, m-government, we also, again, in collaboration with the Office of the Government CIO, define and able to work what is the way forward in the implementation of the program. The next imperative being imperative number three, develop our people. We're looking internally here in terms of the development of our integrated talent management, which we'll say we've already developed and it's been approved. Now is the implementation going forward. We're going to focus on embedding our organizational values to ensure they are instilled in the way that we do business in CETA. Develop and implement leadership and employee interventions, which in this case we're looking at enhancing the organizational capabilities and capacity. Define and define a strategy for closing specific technical skills gaps and generic management and leadership skills. In this case, with the view of increasing the competence level and more so on the technical environment, management and leadership of the organization. We're looking as well as improving and professionalizing the existing management processes and government in terms of supporting what we mentioned earlier in the way we do business. The fourth imperative in this case is talking of achieving operational excellence. First there, we're looking at implementing an IT service management framework, which in this case we're referring to the International Management Framework Standard that is out there. And I think it's important to mention that we've already implemented this part of it, which we are at the moment in the past financial year, compliant up to 77%. We still have to implement the remainder for certification, which hopefully we're looking at 2010 being able to comply fully to the IT service management framework. We're looking as well as implementing an enterprise and operating governance structure for IT, which already I could say as well, one of it which is ISO 9000, we are already certified as an organization. We're looking at the elements of your COVID, which is your governance framework going forward. The next, looking at developing and implementing planning and business processes to deliver clear and transparent mechanisms for tracking progress and performance against strategic objectives. In this case, we could say as well, internally, we implemented the modules within the enterprise resource planning system, which we believe in that already we are beginning to see the results where there's optimization in terms of invoicing and payments and a major reduction in terms of some of the duplications that we were experiencing. And again, in the ERP, our project module is already working and it's in line. Imperative number five, which is reducing costs. We're looking at creating a test service module to centralize, standardized and consolidated delivery of all service offerings, adopt a standard operating environment that can aid in lowering the total cost of ownership, develop and implement an IT asset management strategy, define and implement the voice over IT which I've mentioned earlier on, develop options to minimize duplication by consolidating and standardizing non-core business infrastructure and applications. The last one. We have given government back 225 million in the past financial year, which is 2008 and 2009, which is more in relation to the waiting sector, more for hosting tariffs associated to all the transversal environment and other services. Imperative number five continues. In the quest of reducing costs and more especially around the license management, I know we've listed so much around the SLEs that is defined, but I'd like to bring attention to point 7 and 8. We talked of intense software and hardware renewal as a government-wide initiative as opposed to a departmental function. The next one, which is establish a streamlined procurement process and use volume purchasing and site licenses to establish attractive prices on standardized hardware and software, which we believe all the two, with all the initiatives, we will be able to substantially reduce the way of doing business in a lot of those areas. The next imperative being extend our service footprint. We're looking at developing and implementing strategies to extend service offerings to existing customers, because there is a belief that the more that are on these services, the better we can do business in a less cheaper way. Develop and implement a strategy to extend the existing CISA offering to local government using the shared services model. In this case, the focus is more on extending the network, which is the biggest so far, to local government level, which is believed to enhance the civil public service. Imperative number 7, improve financial sustainability. Straightforward as it is, we're looking at develop and maintain long-term funding strategies, develop and maintain effective working capital management strategies, develop and implement an integrated, consistent and robust planning cycle regime, map services regarding revenue, market share, profitability, develop strategies to protect existing revenue streams, and also concentrate more on asset management. The last imperative before I hand over to Femke is around the building of client relationships. We're concentrating, as I mentioned earlier on, saying out of the customer survey that we bring, it is imperative and critical that we develop and implement a service portfolio database so that we know what it is that we're procuring and the services that we are rendering across the government sector, and also implement the customer relationship management module, which will allow and help us to manage the relationships going forward. And then a customer experience management approach to the way we do business. And I think up to this far, I'm sure Chairperson, we still have a few minutes to allow them here to take us through the budget for 2009 and 10.
Thank you, Chief Honourable Members. Due to time constraints, I knew that they can't give me the first part because I'm so passionate about this organisation. I would take double the time. But allow me then to take you through our finances. The revenue that we want to generate for this financial year within which we are currently is 4.5 billion. I feel it's also worth just to highlight at this stage, you can see it maybe as a dilemma in the financial sustainability management of CETA. On the one hand, we have to reduce the cost for government doing business in terms of ICT. On the other hand, we generate all our revenue through the services that we deliver to government. We don't get a separate allocation from government. So in terms of our objectives, you will see that there's quite a drive to extend our services more into the local authority space, although it's not within our mandated objectives. But we believe in support of the single public service drive of government if we can get the local authorities also connected to our network. And this network, we've done quite a lot of investments, and I'm proud to say that our current network is the biggest public service network in Sub-Saharan, and it's enabled to also carry voice over IT as well as the video streaming. So it's quite a state-of-the-art network that we have implemented for government as per our mandate, and that is the core that we need to deliver on. So yes, we're going to extend those services, specifically the connectivity and utilization of our network, and we hope that through that we will be able to achieve then a 4.5 billion revenue. Our gross profit margin is in at 22%. In order to be financially sustainable, all profits being made in the organization are being reinvested into the services that we render to government, and you'll see later on in the CapEx presentation that quite a lot of money is being spent to conservatively optimize and improve the quality of the network and the hosting environment. The surplus after tax for this year will then be 238. 0.9 million. We are aiming to reduce our debtors days of 60 to 65. It is a challenge that has been a target for the past 3 years, and we really have difficulty to achieve it. We are dependent on government, as I said, to pay for our services. We manage, however, to reduce our creditors' days to 65. And even though we're proud about that and we even want to reduce it further, however, we need to keep it in relation with our debtors, else we will run into trouble from a working capital perspective, is that we really try to pay our SMEs within 15 to 30 days. Because the small companies, especially in IT, equipment is a very high cost as part of the service, and often these SMEs need to pay the original manufacturing suppliers for this equipment. So we need to pay them very quick so that they also have a sustainable cash flow. Our capital expenditure for this year is in 582, of which the bulk is in on our network infrastructure and our hosting environment, which is our mandated services, plus then the optimization of our own environment to ensure that we deliver the quality services that our customers expect from us. Lastly, then our operating expenditure will be a ratio of 16.98%, and our extended target is to try and push that down to 15%. The budget then, in terms of an income statement, I've already reflected the gross revenue of 4.5, our cost of sale is 3.5 billion, and I think the most important service then is that we ultimately end this financial year with a net surplus of 238 million, and I think later on in a few slides it might be more intelligent where we did the comparison with the other financial years. Our financial statement, our balance sheet, just indicates being a strong balance in terms of our assets and our liabilities. In terms of our cash flow statement, the most important part is the cash from our operating activities that we generate in the middle of that slide, which is 593 million. And then the cash flow from our investment activities, as already indicated, we want to spend 583 million, which will ultimately then help us to sustain our healthy financial position that we currently have, and we will have a slight increase in the cash towards the end of the financial year at the bottom of the slide, increasing from 887 to 891. As I already indicated, the following three slides is in more a comparison is in a comparison with other years, where you then could see in the middle column, which is in the 2019, which I have already reflected upon, in relation then to the history, the 2008-09. There our header still indicates forecast, and it's clearly we are currently going through the closing of our financial year. Our statements are being audited, which will be finalized by the end of this month. And then it is the final figures for 2008-09. Then you will see that this year we had a lower profit margin, a gross profit margin of 16.4%. As we have already indicated, in order to balance our own financial sustainability versus the objective of reducing costs for government doing business, we have eventually gave back 225 million to the department, and that was mainly for the hosting environment. Maybe just to give an explanation with regard to that, in the hosting environment, as we, it's a bit technical, but as we increase the capacity of our equipment, it means that the time it takes to process a transaction reduces, which automatically will reduce then the tariff and the price that we get from our customers. However, because we've got a bigger capacity, the system can also process more transactions, which then will increase. And we realized that the utilization of the throughput on these systems has been such tremendous this year that we even tried to say we had no fallovers of the system in the closing of the financial year in March. But obviously, due to the extremely high amount of transactions being generated through the system, we felt it's appropriate to give that money back to government and balancing out the aspects associated to that. Then the next is just again our financial statement or our balance sheet showing across the past 2 years, current financial year and going forward 2 years, we intend to have a healthy financial position. The last one means our cash flow statement. There you will also be able to see we had a slight drop in our cash towards the end of the financial year. Yet we serve also as a contribution to reduce the cost for government doing business. So we just need to have a healthy, sustainable cash flow and profit statement. Our CapEx budget, this is just a breakdown of the different expenses. As I already mentioned, it's 583 million for this financial year. It will be spent on computer programs, equipment, building infrastructure, furniture and equipment. We need to enhance currently our buildings, our three main buildings in Pretoria. There's quite a growth in terms of the hosting environment, and we need more space, so there is an investment that we have to do there. And we also more and more get that government departments, specifically in the application development space, we host and facilitate the and accommodate the resources of those departments where they work close with resources. Therefore, we have additional resources. We currently host a big contingent of the defense, IJS, education, social development, and the police in our buildings where they participate in application development. Maybe just another way of breaking this down and maybe just highlight, I already mentioned that the biggest part of our investment is associated to invest in infrastructure for the delivery of our services. And of this CapEx budget, and obviously it's part of the elements that have been mentioned there, it's just another perspective in which you can look at it, 388 million of that CapEx is purely just for the upgrade of the infrastructure, we refer to it as the NGN, and then the hosting environment, where we then host all the applications of government and processing all their transactions. The challenges that we face. We really have a challenge with our floor management and our ground management. According to our Act, it stipulates that the relationship between CEPA and its department must be regulated by a business agreement and a service level agreement. Unfortunately, because we also have a monopoly, as we referred to in some earlier, we have a tendency that our customers are resistant to sign the service level agreements because they assume by default. However, it really creates a challenge because we believe that the service level agreement is an instrument where we can regulate a business relationship of what their expectations are versus then what we deliver and where do we not perform in accordance to their expectations. So we really have the drive to try and approve them. We have realized that approval chains in some departments are very long, and we are now working first with the government lawyers to see whether we can conclude, specifically with regard to the mandated and what we refer to as transversal systems, single service level agreement, and then allow the customers to sign as an addendum to that agreement, which we believe will optimize the approval process. In terms of our debtors book, it's also a challenge. Because we render mandatory services as per the Act, when customers don't pay, we have challenges to actually stop the services. Because it's mandated, it creates a challenge there. However, we are working very close with the CFOs and our CIOs to ensure that we get timeliest payment. If we don't get the timeliest payment, as already indicated, it often has an impact on the SMEs delivering services, because then CEPA needs to carry the full financial risk associated to late payments by our customers and ensuring that we do pay the SMEs on time. Skills, I think skills as per in the ICT industry, globally it is a challenge, but we have various initiatives like our, a flagship leadership program where we develop skills and then put them back into our business to deliver services to our customers. CEPA has unfortunately gone through an educational challenge as well. We work very hard to ensure sustainability. I think a positive thing, all of us as executives have been in the organization for some time, and I think even with the challenges that we have in terms of acting CEO, collectively we could manage to carry this organization forward and really build on the image of the organization. local economic development. There's a lot of pressure on CETA to participate in that. And we are in the process of what we call a decentralization of procurement. What that actually means is we want to establish tenders in the provinces and make sure that companies in that province respond to those tenders and that ultimately those companies can deliver the services to government in those provinces. We have a challenge that many of the big organizations, especially the global organizations, they have a footprint across the country, but that doesn't enhance our SMEs. So we are working close with BITF as well, having discussions where we believe there's representation on our SME organizations, and we now define the new procurement strategies for each province, and then work close with the province to see how we can enhance procurement activities in the province. If I can move on, I think I'm also running out of time, as I can get so passionate. Just the last slide is then help required. I think in terms of the flaws in the BAs, it's just a matter, we all need to live and believe that the FLA is the mechanism of managing a business relationship, expectations of delivery. We have to maybe escalate in some instances the debtor situation where government departments are sometimes indicating to us that they have no budget if we have delivered. And then obviously in terms of what I've already mentioned, the managing perceptions of the organization, building on our image, and use our local economic development, wherever we can get help to even better understand and optimize our procurement in strategies, that would really help us. Thank you. That is all from my side.
I would like to thank the presenter. Now, I would like also to welcome our chairperson here, Honorable Joyce Malloy Maropa. She will take over for me after the break. We'll be having now question time, answers, after the short break, 10 minutes, tea break, and then she can start. I do believe that we will be able to make it. Okay? But before you ask a question, honorable member, please identify yourself. And then you can ask a question. Let us, for the first round, keep it two questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I'd just like to say wonderful to have the Minister here this morning and the Chairperson from CETA. Thank you very much for being here. And I'd like to acknowledge the fact that the Deputy Minister found time to be with us again. It's an absolute honor to have you with us. I think just some key concerns, you know, from a public service perspective. One of them is a constant, and I know the Minister actually addressed this, but I'd like to understand what the first Mayor of Kowloon Chair has been in her position at CETA, the chairperson, if I may ask that question. My second question is, why is there a consistent turnaround of CEOs? Is there a leadership issue, or is there political interference? Those are my first two questions, and I
have many more to come. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Member. Next. I'm Jennifer Scopus from the Democratic Alliance. I'd like to ask the following two questions. There was a 2% drop in employee satisfaction level. Steps were taken in due course. If there is an improvement now as far as employment satisfaction, employee satisfaction is concerned, and then related to that, what is the latest customer satisfaction index? In last year it was 61%. In comparison with the 63% in 2007. Wow. Thank you.
Yes, my question goes to the nature of the relationship between CETA and government. I understand correctly that CETA's only customer is government. In that sense, you're in monopoly. But government departments, if I understand correctly, don't necessarily have to use CETA. They have a choice. They can use CETA or they can use other similar departments or similar agencies that are providing a similar service. Now, so government departments have a choice. They can use you or they don't have to use you. So if they choose to use you, that's their choice. And I find it quite ironic, and I'm glad the minister is here, because it's maybe just a comment for you and not more questions for the minister. Your problem is that you have a problem with getting government departments to sign services and agreements, and once they've done that, or they haven't done it, but you put it into some sort of agreement with them, you have difficulty in collecting debts. Now, government is supposed to collect debts for services delivered at various levels of government where government provides service. Now, the one instance where service is provided to government, government doesn't pay their debt. So, this is more question for the minister, that he makes sure that CETA's problem in this regard is solved and that government sets the example and pays their debt timelessly. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Andrea. Any more questions from the members?
Maybe one would really request you to unpack particularly in that point, just different metrics, the real world you assume that you're confident that in the light of, because again, it's a high turnover of the CEOs. So if we can also be convinced, give us some learning for the same of the collective, which will be able to make it to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think we will allow the next round, Honourable Member, we will allow the next round of more questions. Let us give the opportunity to the partner now to respond to the question.
I will answer the question about how long I've been a tenant and since August last year. I think the question about the agency or the main family would like to respond to that.
Okay. I'm thankful for the appreciation of our presence here today, and want to commit ourselves before you, Chairperson, and the portfolio committee. But this is in our culture of doing things. That whenever the portfolio committee is sitting, unless we are committed on issues of maybe more importance and will inform the chairperson, that will not be available. Otherwise, either the minister or the deputy minister will be with you. So we will be available, because why we are saying this, we understand in terms of the rule of trial politica, in as far as the separation of power and also the accountability mechanism that goes with that. To them, the executive takes responsibility and account to Parliament. And portfolio committees as extensions of Parliament and focusing on specific issues, in this case, public service and administration, we will be regularly available to you, as you know, to be with you. That's one thing. Now, on the question raised, I want to first respond in the form of an undertaking, and secondly, respond in terms of answering this question. I think we owe the nation what the presentation indicates are my challenges. What is this that is going on? How in the public discourse would agree with me that there is more to write about the challenges that are in CETA than the good performance that CETA is actually doing? Whether that is the skewed nature of our reporting or whether that's an indication of the balance in terms of what is more dominant in CETA. That is something that I want to make a commitment that we will actually address the portfolio committee, not even addressing the issues that are indicated, the challenges there. That is the undertaking. Because in any question you might want to ask a question, or in my questions, if you take the question that deals with the request or the help that is required, and also the challenge. CETA says if they were to be involved with FOSAT, I'm sure you understand that FOSAT is a forum for South African Directors General. And that is a forum of heads of state or government departments. And CETA exists as a company that is actually solely owned by the state. Whether that concern is justified or not is actually in the nature of the things that are out in the public debate. My undertaking is that the chairperson will come back to the portfolio committee in as far as the challenges that are identified and the help that is required in terms of the presentation will come to account as to why is it if the state has a relationship with CETA in two fronts. One, the state being the shareholder. Other, a government department receiving service from CETA. Okay. Why this challenge? I think that's where we are then saying we will actually come back to attend to that. The chairperson is right to say that she has been chairperson since August last year. But we understand that in the life of CETA, it's not for the first time that he is 10% of CETA. I want to come to that so that if you want to make a follow-up and say, but there was some voting by the name of Brother Manas, is it you or any other person? So that we understand that she has been there. So these are the things that I may have to indicate. In as far as why this high turnover rate of chief executive officers, because I said you have the acting chief executive officer who has taken over from the acting chief executive officer, and it has always been out in the public discourse that the CETA is running on acting capacity. Well, that goes into the history of what CETA is. And in my undertaking that I said we'll come back to the portfolio committee to address, this is one thing that we'll also talk to. Because it's true that in a period of about 10 years of CETA's existence, you have had a situation of more than 10 chief executive officers coming to the kitchen. And that is a commitment that we are going through to then check as to what is going on. The board and management will remember we had a meeting to discuss about this matter. And I'm raising this as part of the commitment effort, and that will come back to this. And we then said, Noma, what's happening? What is this cost that is saving people around here? Are we not paying enough? Is it because the portfolio committee is not supporting? Is it because the shareholder is not playing a part? What's going on? We will come back in a full report to the portfolio committee. That's the undertaking that we are making. We'll have a debate. Well, this is the entity that we created as the report has indicated in the background. that after the presidential review committee in 1998, we saw it fit that we needed to actually have this entity so that it is in a position to drive the state IT needs. The challenges are there, it used to be quite a number of them, would then be in a position to deal with that. At the moment, we have a team of three assisting one another at the position where you are supposed to be having one person as acting chief executive officer, so that you strengthen this office to be able to deliver in the meantime until when we appoint a chief executive officer, as I indicated in my opening remarks, that in no time we will have the chief executive officer be appointed. So that is what I wanted to indicate chairperson to them. I was even checking with the chairperson on the challenges and the help. To them say it's correct to seek help. It's correct to reflect challenges. But it's also correct to indicate what you are doing in the meantime in terms of the challenges that we are talking about. And this is why I am saying, having identified these challenges, we are actually at an advanced stage. We may actually even request the portfolio committee to place us on our agenda before Parliament, right? That will actually come back to actually address you on that point. So that is the thing that I may be able to say. Because if we were to respond, we'll take one point after the other. It will even take the time that is allocated for Palama. And I'll be so worried that the political authority, that the capacity building a part of the state will not be reflected in terms of that. Having said that, I indicated in my opening remarks that running on aging capacity at the executive level and running on a diminished capacity at board level, we are confident that the team that we have to make sure that FIFA is not sinking until when we actually come back. I think if the time when they come to present to you, I think if you go through the annual report, it will be very clear that FIFA is afloat despite all these things that are actually being said about. So we are confident that we have an entity that is being managed, that is a leadership at the moment. That takes its form, but will come back to deal with this unanswered question. We are not going to hide anything. Our democracy is also characterized by transparency. And that then says when we account to you, we have to account and actually say it all so that you'll be of help. Because in a situation where we say separation of powers between Parliament and the executive, there is also the context of that. And that is power convergence. We are all doing our work in the interest of building the state, in the interest of being patriotic to accepting the process forward. So we'll come back to you, Mr. Chairperson, on this issue. Thank you.
May I just say my apologies to Mr. Orden that I answered like the team council to say Orden. I have been a speaker since 2002, I was chairman at that time, and then in 2005, I was an ordinary member, and then in August they asked me to come back. And I must say, in those 10 CEOs that have been left in a high tenure, during my board tenure, we appointed Mokusen Kaman, who was the first CEO to stay for over 2 years. So there was some stability, and we hope now when we get the new CEO, we'll get that kind of stability again. Thank you. I think the operational issues will be clearly answered by terms of the number of the employee satisfaction and customer satisfaction.
Yes, thanks, Chair. I would like to take the employee satisfaction question of the 2% drop that we've experienced in the year 2007 and 2008. And I would like to positively say, in the previous financial year, which is 2008 and 2009, we've seen an improvement of more than 15% in terms of internal employee satisfaction. I believe it's due to the interventions that we've identified collectively and deployed within the organization to ensure that at least we strike a balance between leaving the values and the way we do business in CETA which we believe that is beginning to actually manifest itself within how employees view their day-to-day and view the organization vis-a-vis the client focus. And I'm sure Femke can take the customer satisfaction survey question.
Thank you. My response comes to that positive. Unfortunately, our customer satisfaction has dropped further last year. If I can be good, and seems like I can be wrong, but I think it was 57, it dropped to 57%. The three main issues that was highlighted was the concern about cost effectiveness. Hence, we have initiated this year. We are currently busy doing a global benchmark on all our mandatory services. We have at this stage capped our tariff that we charge as being approved by National Treasury as indicated in the Act. So we've capped them until our benchmark is done, and then we will renegotiate with government in terms of our tariff. The second issue was the procurement efficiency. There was a lot of complaints and concerns raised there. We have also now initiated a procurement transformation program, where the bulk of the focus is in terms of process optimization, standardization, security, and making sure that we have full control in terms of even the accusations associated to corruption and fraud in our procurement. So we are confident that it is the second highest priority strategic program. Our highest priority program at this stage is the finalization of the implementation of our enterprise resource program. That was then also the third issue that was raised by our customers, and it was highlighted in the slide here as well, in terms of our timeliness invoicing and the accuracy of our invoices. Through our resource planning system that we started to implement in 2007-08, we have now focused on changing the operational approach in the organization to a project management approach. We monitor the productivity of all our resources through a time management system, and we have automated the bulk of the invoicing process so that there's less human intervention and so that we have appropriate alignment between our creditors' payments versus our debtors' collection and associated to that, the invoicing. So we've already initiated as part of the financial year these three programs, which we are convinced we will start to pick up the customer satisfaction index again, because it is a focused program. The last one, as a general one, we also realize that we need to understand our customer better, especially from the perspective of the monopoly, and we have also driven in this year the implementation of the CRM. It might sound that it is logic, it needs to be in the organization. We had disparate customer relationship systems in the organization. So the customer facing has a system by which they manage the relationship, the project management has their own system, and through our ERP, we can now collaborate the information associated to our customers that at any point in time, anybody that liaises with the customer, whether it's in terms of a relationship building, whether it's service monitoring engagement, they will have access to a single system to see in totality what are we doing in that customer environment, what is the financial status of that environment, what are the agreements that have been signed there, what are the projects that we're doing there, and how are we progressing and performing against those services. And we believe by that then, it will give access to the total leadership of CETA whenever they engage to start to improve and articulate better then the expectations of the customer. And then just lastly, from the GCIO, and as part of our gut check, it was identified that the IT plan, a national IT plan for government, is critical. And at this stage, even the GCIO with other representatives of CETA is in Eastern Cape, working with all the provinces to start to define that IT plan, which will also help us to improve the management of the demand and supply for our customers.
Thank you. Are you covered, members? Any questions left out? Honourable Linda?
Thank you, Chairperson. Additional question. I'd like to understand
how many board meetings have been set up this year, how many, what the attendance were to those board meetings. And given the depletion of the board, I think that's obviously a bit of a concern. Then additionally, given that this is a state IT organization, they are supposed to provide leadership to all government departments in terms of the various spheres. So for example, I see a number of initiatives here, such as service-orientated architects. Now, if one, I'd like to understand whether they've done a proper cost analysis of that. Then additionally, there is a project management competency issue within the organization. I'd like to understand what the cost impact analysis of that is in terms of being able to supply services to the various governments, because I think that will have an impact on their service, the government departments actually wanting to apply and sign their service level agreement. And before you can do a service level agreement, you have to have an operational level agreement. So I need to understand, you know, what they've put in place themselves with all of those areas, because they've put many things across the shopping list here. And, you know, they're looking for additional finance for other areas. Then additionally, the telecommunications organization of South Africa, Telkom, which is also a government or a state-owned organization to a degree, has spent significant finance on an NGN. I need to understand why we would not look for economies of scale in terms of providing services in conjunction with that organization. I thank you.
Honourable Councillor, I think that question belongs to the second round. We are not there yet. Okay. At Key Town 25, I was not gone. But I will allow that second round of questions and maybe another thing. Before I do that, I would like now to hand over to the chairperson.
Okay.
Okay.
I think the Minister's intervention became relevant for those who are going through really the new, the issue of foresight was really critical. So it's really a point of concern. I realize that he has wanted to address it as one aspect, but also the issue of services, you know, and which I really appreciate, and which has been the question and the way of answering it, which I see too. I'm actually raising this, you know, in the light that the fourth democratic parliament is very new, and you can realize some of the members are really new. So even the question at first, it's a genuine question where we're trying to know one another in detail. Therefore, it really helps most of us not to remain with unanswered questions or asking ourselves the surveys, so that moving forward, we're able to know one another quite better. It's unfortunate that we had to make introduction to ourselves while we also had to do other tasks like dealing with the budget at the moment. We therefore cannot allow us sufficient time to go over this issue. But safe to say, being involved in this, because actually we have to hit the ground running, the intervention as well, that we realize that there are some issues that we really need to revisit and follow up on this matter. As this committee, we are actually noting the agencies, and the agency of justice to revisit that as an area of concern. And we definitely will make a follow-up as a committee and we'll arrange for that because it is a priority area and we believe it's one of the huge areas in government. And therefore, in this instance, the Honourable Minister would really request that you've already announced that we can be able to interact your willingness and your readiness. We therefore have been looking there because we definitely have to deal with a number of other issues and quite clearly if we can be the 35 in terms of challenges and how we can be able to deal with them. But we cannot be able to address all issues that we are here today, and we have to really move forward in the light of time. And I agree with the Minister, we really want to hear in detail the panel's presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I would also like to extend that attention to the Honourable Minister for being able to come back to us as soon as possible. Because I don't believe the time constraints really don't allow us to really go into deep into this issue. We're already busy now with the second round. any more questions, please? Let us get to phase two. Because two, the one will be ideal, but two are allowed to.
Thank you, Chair. If this is in the control environment has been identified by internal audit, what action has been taken to remedy those weaknesses? That's my first question. And the short second one, Chair. In far as the report of the audit can really concern, irregular expenditure to the amount of 11 million rand has been indicated. And also the prior year's external audit recommendations have not been substantially implemented. I would like some comments on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Godfrey. Any more questions? I think we are done. Allow another department to respond.
So let me answer the same one, which is the weaknesses in the control environment were identified by two actions working with them. And these are the things that we reported. The other thing is the internal audit report that we are dealing with, and we are following up on all those responses. Before I became chair in August, I was a panel on the audit committee. And I was looking at all of those things, and these are the tools that we pick up all the time. As far as the 11 million irregular expenditure, it relates to a staff member who authorized a lease agreement over 5 years when he had no authority to do it. The board ratified that because the lease was going to be renewed anyway, but because it was renewed by a wrong person, it became an irregular expenditure. So you see that expenditure in the next 5 years, because it's every year. Because it's by clear and then that it was approved by a wrong person. So the board ratified it because we were going to approve it, but it was 70 million, I think it was about 70 million, it had to go to the board for approval because everything that's above 70 million comes to the board. But this is a lease where people are sitting in a building, and we were going to remove that building as well. So it is a proper time. Next. As far as the board meetings that we attended, last year we had a CEO resigning in July, and that caused a lot of problems in terms of staff members, unhappiness, and all of that. We had many, many meetings. I have not seen the final report to actually say how many, but those meetings were received with a lot of unhappiness with staff members, with the resignation of the CEO, with assistant board members, with meeting with the new a new minister because the minister left. So we have many, many meetings. And as a result of that, you can see that CETA is still up and going. But we worked very, very hard as a board. That day we had a change of the old board to a new board that became chairman in August. So there was a lot of things that we did. So it is a very high number of meetings that we had as a board. But all of those was to make sure that CETA is afloat as far as everything is concerned, to make sure that this entity can support and can be as stable as we can see. There has been a slight decline in terms of revenue, in terms of profit and operational generated profit, but we have worked hard to make sure that we still are reporting a profit this year, and we still have companies that is here.
I think Sandy will respond on the other operation.
Thank you. In terms of cost impact analysis, in terms of the program management, I really thought my computer numbers, but what we have done after we started to look at the compliance to project management principles, the productivity of our resources associated to our projects, we realize that where we need to start is to ensure a competency assessment. So last year we focused on doing a competency assessment of all project management, all project management, project administration, and program management. And we have been developed a focused skills development program in that area. Secondly, then what we have implemented last year as well is enhance the Enterprise Program Management Office, where we have defined processes associated with project management, and we have defined now, as part of our implementation of our ERP and taking the change in terms of a project management approach, that we have developed monitoring and control reports by which we can monitor now, as we do it currently on a monthly basis, in terms of all our strategic projects, of the performance of the project against doing the CPA. So if you would like to see more detail, I think that I will have to send in at a later stage. In terms of the telecom relationship, we are not like telecom, somebody that builds a network, so we leverage off the telecom and the Newtel network. At this stage, in the past, our network was a full telecom network. From a technical perspective, it means the core backbone as well as the access layer. With the establishment of Newtel, we went out on a tender for the core, and it so happened that we're running now the core backbone on the Newtel NGN and the access layer on the telecom part. We are at this stage reassessing on the cost-effectiveness of having the split in terms of the two fixed line operators in the country. We think we are ready, both of them are now well established, and being part of government, we believe that we can re-look at the compilation of our network and whether we still need to have the split between Telkom and Airtel that we run on the network. It has been a virtual private network running on very physical infrastructure and fiber, and the reason why it is still a virtual private network is to ensure security and measures associated to our network. Hence, we need to close it from the public type of network to be run on the infrastructure. I think just if I could add, in terms of the weaknesses in the control environment, as part of our implementation of our ERP, we also realized in order to optimize on your control environment, you need to standardize your processes. So we have gone through a business process re-engineering exercise and a whole awareness program, making sure that everybody complies to the standardized process. And then furthermore, we have now enhanced the implementation of the ERP to automate many of those systems so that you also have automated control. And by that, we believe that we are currently improving in terms of our control mechanisms.
Thank you. I think we have now a short break for 10 minutes. See any questions outside? Enjoy yourself. What are two? Let's get out. No, let's go for it.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome back, and thanks for all of you being present. We have had the presentation by Sita, and now we will be having a presentation by Kalami. I know there was an overview given earlier on, but I know that the second we were to sort of pick up some few things that introductory things leading to the presentation. We do have limited time, and sometimes we say we are really interested to know in detail, but it's very obvious that most of the issues cannot be raised in this type of meeting. But surely those that are critical and agile members will actually do a good response or pick up on what they need to be cleared. What the challenge is focusing particularly on ensuring when we know Palama, we also deal with the issue of the budget as well. I'm sure, I don't know if the 30 minutes are still yet, but I'm sure the 30 minutes are brand new with me. Yesterday, when there was an African public service day in Centurion, Joburg, it's called the way there was a late mission of, you know, the critical institution about somebody coming to Palama in terms of relating to the current scenario. And most people were talking about the synergy within the institutions that we have established. And a lot of interest was taken in this training institution, so we are eagerly ready to hear what Palama is doing, and I'm handing it over to you. Dr. Austin will lead us with the presentation. Am I right?
No, you are very right. Then I have already made political remarks. made the level of the play fair. Our champion player is Dr. Hawking. Play and four.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Probably this is the only moment I'll have to differ from the Minister, because you'll see that in Palama, the DG plays perhaps at right back. You'll discover the midfield of strikers who get all the TV coverage are part of the benches today. Honourable Chair and Members, thank you very much indeed for welcoming us to this, which is our first presentation to the committee in the 12th government of our new democracy. And we too, as has been remarked, are especially honoured to have been led today by our Minister and Deputy Minister. It makes the occasion interestingly different for us because, of course, they are now keeping a keen eye on whether we do a decent job for you. What we try to do in the presentation, official heading, of course, is our strategy and budget. But mindful that this is really a get-acquainted session for the next 5 years, and what we will know will be many occasions for interaction and strategic guidance, and indeed quite possibly criticism and comments, we thought we would effectively set a baseline by conveying our broad mandate and strategy, by noticing our new minister's infusion into that strategy, and then explaining very briefly how we've been reconstituted, what we do. And we like to claim that what we do is rather a lot. Even though we're a small organization by comparison with the minister's other department, ECSA, and very small organization compared to CETA, our whole budget is less than their surplus. But we have a huge remit, as members will see, Chair, in the scale not only of the 10,000 SMS, but the 250,000 junior and middle management cells within a public service of 1.4 million. And obviously, to be effective on that scale with our size, as you will see, we have to work in a partnership model, ensuring that government's practical interests are met at the same time as mobilizing a very broad range of stakeholders to help us achieve impact. Now, to do that mobilization, we in turn have an interesting modern structure that will come up in the presentation. And in fact, I have 9 colleagues, DDGs, or chief directors reporting to me in this structure, and they'll be introduced in the presentation. But our approach over the years has been, Chair, to bring colleagues to meet the committee in the course of the various presentations, and the Minister kindly introduced, if I might very quickly recap, we have in fact 5 of our 9 branch heads present, and we met Rufus McLana, if you want to wave, and Marie Montezzi, and Carla Senta, who will be talking to the money at the end, Portobello Mata, and then Soria Arden. You'll see that most of the colleagues will present, and I'll leave the difficult work to them, and because Soria isn't presenting, they'll leave all the difficult questions to her. And then Len Zamela, where is Len? Is our new director of communications, and he'll start his presentation. So we'll move through really rapidly without further introduction. The colleagues will be sharing different parts of the presentation. Now, when Carla has to use a pointer with the money, I think he'll end down there. So in all the screens you can see, when you want to see what amount he's talking, look for his laser pointer on that one, because we didn't quite know how else to brought to mind. Thank you, Chair, for those preliminaries. let's begin, therefore, with the policy environment and the mandate. In this last election and since the Polokwane and other party conferences, there's been a huge emphasis on seeking improvement in the public service. And we saw statements from the President about the importance of courteous and efficient service, that public servants must be professional. Our new Minister of Planning, Minister Manuel, spoke about the need for competence, all of that as requirements of delivering on a developmental state. Now, Palama's role in contributing to these important demands is, of course, through training and management development. And that flows from our statutory mandate, which, of course, the broad shape comes from the Constitution, but in particular, the training institution for government is provided in the Public Service Act, where it's our job to provide training or cause training to be provided with associated certification. Now, that's not a very new act, and the function will be broadened in all likelihood with a single public service bill, which rightly notes the very important interaction that Palama has to undertake with other training institutions in order to deliver on the required scale. And of course, an important part of our policy environment are the prescripts that our minister makes through regulation, which set a framework within which heads of department and their political principles function. Now, in particular, our minister met the executives of all of his portfolio institutions at once. It was indeed almost like a rally, and we had the exciting opportunity to hear how the minister's priorities for the coming 5 years for each of us related across all of the institutions in his portfolio. And we've identified them there, and you'll find that each of these is taken up at a particular juncture in the rest of the presentation. But, Chair, before touching on the slide, I think what runs through the slide is a really important reminder in the new government that South Africa is a very broad and diverse place. And in fact, half of our population lives out of urban areas. And that there are additionally demanding challenges for the developmentally oriented civil service in those kinds of arenas. And our minister has very specifically reminded us of that in the first of the four priority projects. He asked us to take forward to emphasize, to budget for in the course of the coming years. And that is the one about tackling barriers to entry into the public service experience by graduates, especially women or black graduates from rural areas, perhaps who've been to universities that are less well regarded, but who actually have to be the developmental agents. In fact, the ministers call them the public service activists on behalf of those communities. Now, that's a challenge which we really, as you see, are only beginning to take on board properly. That's why politics works, Chair, is for there to be changes of emphasis for the delivery arm of government. And this is going to be an important part of our thinking and successive meetings with yourselves. And secondly, leadership. There's always a stress on service delivery implementation. And if that is not set in a powerful strategic context by enabled leaders, that won't succeed. And we have this notion of leadership up and down. On the one hand, Cabinet at the Lokota last year envisaged the remarkable idea of induction for remarkable in our context, of induction for MPs and Cabinet ministers, additional to the more technical induction or orientation given by the Cabinet Secretariat. And this is not unusual in several other countries, and at the Minister's instigation, you benchmark those into working up a program, so that induction then won't only be for civil servants all the way down to grade one, but in fact for executives and principals all the way up to the top. Thirdly, you will touch on the induction training, by which the aim is that every new public servant will experience a couple of days introductory with takeaway material to use later on things like the constitution, basso pele, user orientation, courtesy to developmental state, and so on. And lastly, the wider horizon, the Health Management Development Institute in post-conflict countries develop their capacity for the improved good governance and development of our whole continent. So, Chair, that really sets the legislative, the general policy, and our new policy framework against which our colleagues will introduce. We are trying to communicate that. We're working just at this moment on communication strategy, and in this slide we identify, you could call it, our key target audiences. Obviously public servants themselves, especially the manager, but also the HR components in departments, who are the people who have to identify the relevant training for their particular entity. The institutions with whom we partner, and how we'll have to align them. The principals, be they ministers, MEPs, DGs, who will want to demand that training for their components, and the minister will confirm that at each Lefosla. It's almost a refrain through the 3 days, is the challenge of building specialist capacity and general management capacity. And then lastly, of course, the public, who are the key intended beneficiaries of improved delivery.
Thank you very much, DG. Honourable members, I just want to premise my presentation by saying that Palama is the government academy. Therefore, the target group for this particular department is a public service. And we thought maybe as it's a public service, we need to define them and unpack the numbers which are involved in this particular target group. Therefore, this slide shows some of the essential numbers which are involved in the public service. And you'll know that in this particular slide, we're also including local governments, which is part of our mandate in ensuring that capacity building takes place at the particular tier of government. If you look at the last bullet on this particular slide, apart from the numbers, 1.4 million public servants, we are also saying that government departments, on average, they are spending 2% annually on training. And that is double the figure as required by the Skills Development Levy Act, which is good. But if you look at the last bullet on that particular slide, we are saying that in 2006, our sister department conducted research amongst middle managers within in provinces, and they found that nearly half of those middle managers did not receive any formal training in 2006. And that was a worry for us as a capacity building arm of government, and in a situation where we are spending double what we are supposed to spend in terms of training. Next slide. This slide looks at the landscape within which Palama is working within. Right at the center, we've got national, where we are based, though our mandate covers national, provincial, and local. The next layer, the bluish, light bluish one, with the arrow linking to the left-hand periphery of the slide, shows you the provincial size of the national department. Therefore, we are trying to emphasize there that the employees employed by national departments, the bulk of those employees are located within the regional sites of the national departments, Department of Home Affairs being the example here. Apart from these three spheres of government, we are also illustrating on this slide that Palama is not the only player in terms of training development within the public sector. We've got quite a number of other external providers like higher education institutions, private and further education training, private institutions, and other international associations. And on the left hand side again, we are also having some regulatory bodies who are governing the training and development landscape within the red block is there. And at the bottom is what other dedicated colleges, which are located mainly in national departments like justice, foreign affairs, trust, etc. They've got what we call sectoral colleges. The next slide. This slide, honorable members, is trying to answer the question, where do we come from as Palai? What process did we follow and where are we now? We're having six directional arrows there, which commence in the commencement year, in 2006, when the Ministerial Committee was established to assess the capacity and capability of some events to respond to the capacity building needs of the public sector. And in many respects, we have found one thing, and we are just highlighting three bullets there. One being, somebody was found to be inflexible for a training institution. Secondly, it was found to be in a competitive mode with other providers within the public sector and including the private sector. And lastly, we also seem to be focused on short-term demand-driven programs rather than long-term planning. And then that particular process started in 2006 when the cabinet approved the establishment of a new academy as a Schedule 1 department headed by DG to foster and coordinate delivery of training on a meaningful scale, underline the meaningful scale within the public sector. And we are underlining meaningful scale in the sense that somebody then used to train 20 or 1,000 public servants per annum. And that was found to be a drop in the ocean, given the total population of the people who need training. And we are arguing that we need a department, a new academy, which can ensure that it mobilizes and works with all the partners involved in training within the public service to ensure that we do more than what some used to do. At the moment, just to provide an example, one program, which is our mass induction program, is generating 20,000+ people per annum. And then right at the end, we are showing the current status where we are indicating that some is no more. We have launched the academy, and the academy has got a balanced scorecard approach to strategy and operations, and we're in a new building, and programs are running, though we are busy working on the impact of those programs. Next slide. This just emphasis of the previous slide, where we are showing the shift from the old family strategic objectives to the new Palama strategic objectives, which are based on a balanced scorecard approach. There are four main ones: service delivery, stakeholder relations, lateral contribution to the organization, corporate governance, and we added the fifth one, transformation into the academy, because that was the key deliverable over the last 2 years. Next slide. This slide takes the balance scorecard approach to a more concrete level as captured in our SMART plan. It shows how we plot our strategic objectives linked to indicators, which are the green part, and linked to activities. And it's an example of the strategic development program. And if you look at the branch, the proposed agreement of a branch here, you'll see this commitment forming part of the key deliverable.
Chair, if I might just compliment there. If honorable members then go to the strat plan document, which is in two parts. In the rear part, pages 41 to 55, you'll find the balanced scorecard as deliverables under the five headings for all of the nine branches. And it allows me also to mention, Chair, you see inside the front cover of the strat plan the approach that FOSAD recommended for the selection year, which is that we do not update the narrative part of the report. That strategy is applicable. Now, obviously, we're about 18 months further down the road. But what we did do, as part of those requests, was then update the balance scorecard at the rear of the document with a new outer year. So the 3 years of commitment are up to date at the end, and the front part will be rewritten for this meeting next year. And I think all the portfolio committees will find that that's the approach because of the election.
Thank you very much, DG. On that particular note, we go to the next slide, which now deals with the broad-based strategy of Palama. We express our strategy in three broad strategic shifts, taking note that we are moving from the old family and we are in Palama now. First of all, we are moving from doing training itself to providing and managing training at Palama. And we're also moving from being a competitor to being a collaborator with a full range of other training providers within the public service, including higher teaching institutions and other providers. The third bullet there talks about us moving from being selective to comprehensive coverage for what we call a massified delivery. Massified delivery taking into account the numbers involved in terms of the public service. We do that by focusing on two areas. The first main stream of activity is our SMS, which comprises about 10,000 officials within the public service. And there we are focusing on the great development program for entrance, low and upper SMS, and we are doing this in collaboration with a number of universities and counterparts at provincial level also. The second main activity looks at the junior and middle managers within the public service. We've got about 250,000 of those kind of managers within the public service. And we do that in various ways. One of the ways is to ensure that we develop and agree on training frameworks for curriculum, material, and accreditation of programs. The last bullet on that particular slide also talks about our focus, as picked up by the Ministerial Committee in 2006, focus on the induction program for all new entrants through a blended learning approach. At the moment, we've got a ministerial directive which compels all public servants, level 1 to 12, to undergo our massified induction program before they are confirmed as permanent employees of the public service. Next slide. This slide is depicting all our strategic partners without going through all of them. It shows the internal partners within the public service in the form of individuals and in the form of departments, but it also illustrates some of the partners which are outside the public service, like high teaching institutions, like the CETA, etc. But we also have at the bottom there the regional and continental partners who play a key role in informing us and sharing best practices with us as farmers. Next slide.
Just quickly on that slide. That woman on the junior and middle managers is running with some fire in her head. Can you explain that one?
Remember, these are the jewels within the palaces. You call them operational experience. They're doers, and they are in most cases front desk officials who interact with the citizens. And if they are not in place, then they will shoot us.
Chairperson, if all of these pictures have real meaning, then why are they reducing the ministers to ribbon cutters?
We know that we will improve next time. But obviously the parliament and ministers and MECs even at provincial level are key strategic partners in informing our program. This is the team, the top leadership of the organization with the DG and all the branches. They are in two colors, it's not a racial classification, white and yellow, or what do you call it, the Tata one. If you look at the legend at the top there, it's defining why we are using those colors. The white are the units which are funded from the parliamentary vote, from the trade account, the white, and then the master color are the units which are funded from the parliamentary vote. The nine branches, the flat organization, obviously all these nine branches report to the DG, and DG has got a nice way of expressing it to say that is the first of modern organization, but you don't have to manage these executives, but you need them.
Thank you. Next slide. This is another picture of the top management team at the MET at the operational plan workshop. Next slide. This slide may be of interest to you. It shows our this paragraph shows our employment equity at senior management service level over a period of 3 years, according to the four categories defined by Department of Labor. But what is I want to draw your attention to the bottom part of the particular slide, which talks about disability profile. Over the last 2 years, we have been having 0% in terms of disability within the organization. But in the last year, as counted by the end of March this year, we were at over 2% of disability within the SMS in American year. So it's a big achievement for us, and I think it shows our comprehensive recruitment campaign and process, which we embarked on since 2007. I want to pause here and pass over to my colleague, Mr. Abitayama.
Thanks, Chairperson and honorable members. I will run quickly through the next 9 slides, and in doing so, I will also touch on the 3 priorities, 3 of the 4 priorities that the Minister has identified for us to worry about. The first area falls under what we call the Executive Development Branch, and this is the branch within which we are worrying about what the Minister calls leadership up and down. So we develop courses for executives, for members of parliament, for DGs and the rest of the SMS in trying to ensure that we develop leadership up and down. You will see, for instance, that we empower senior managers, we design and deliver programs for them, and we also undertake research with regard to public service training and management development. Some of the programs that we've been running linked to executive development include the 5 programs that we would list as the executive development programs, programs for ministerial support staff, Project Haidu that we run. That's the learning framework that shapes our intervention in terms of leadership. You will see, I think, just 3 points that I want to make on that slide. Our intervention is in twofold. One, on the one hand, we deal with leadership and management development through technical and professional skills, upgrading and updating those. On the other hand, we believe that leadership development also has to do with coaching and mentoring, which will inform decision-making, which should inform strategic and organizational progress. But we are very cognizant of the fact that capacity building and leadership development doesn't happen in a vacuum. So there's a space within which it can succeed or fail. Now, our sister department, the Department of Public Service and Administration, worries a lot about those space issues, you know, your HR issues, your institutional environment, your performance management system. So in our learning framework, we're quite confident that capacity building has to take place within that space. And I think that's why it makes sense that we are all part of one portfolio. Those are some of the graduates. You can see the handsome gentleman in a crimson suit in the middle. That was at our graduation ceremony with our executive development colleagues last year. The second area, which will also touch on the second priority that the Minister has raised with us, deals with more the junior and middle management services. And that's where we have a branch, which I'm also responsible, Kamsa Management Branch, whose responsibility is to ensure that we develop learning materials for junior and middle managers. We make sure that the curriculum and the courses are quality assured, accredited, and what we are pushing for is also that increasingly we do not want training to only be face-to-face. We are pushing quite hard that increasingly there must be a blended approach. So more and more of the training also has to be available online and off face-to-face. So that's the one that we deal with. We've had in the last year received our 5-year institutional accreditation, full accreditation for 5 years as per the public services data. we have already started rolling out one of the programs, working closely with the National Treasury on Supply Chain Management, which is an online program that we're rolling out, linked to the engagement that we've had with our colleagues in Brazil and India on how they've been able to successfully roll out learning using multimode delivery mechanisms. We've also, part of what we've been worried about, and it has to do with that egg, that multicolored egg that my colleague talked about earlier, is that we have Palama, which is a national institute, but you do have provincial academies, you do have training entities. And what we've been worrying about is that we didn't want to duplicate in terms of curriculum development and training interventions. There's a need for us to synchronize what we do. So what a provincial academy does in terms of financial management training has to be synchronized with what we do in the same area. So what we've done in that regard, we've collected data across all the training academies to see what programs do they have, how different are they from the ones that they have, are they accredited or not accredited, and how can we pull all of this into one resource as part of our collaboration and partnership, so that we can all be able to be pulling from one central point as national and provincial and at local level. The last point has to do, and I have separate slides on that, with the unemployed crisis, which is a problem that we've begun to worry about. Because part of the problem that we have in South Africa is that we do have a suite of graduates who are unemployed on the one hand. On the other hand, you have vacancies in the public service that have remained unfilled. Now, the issue that the minister has brought to attention is that we can't just pretend that this problem doesn't exist, and therefore we need to think of a mechanism that will deal with this issue. Now, one of the ways, of course, is what we call a top-up course, where we say you have these suite of graduates. They don't have to go back to university or technicon for them to be employable. But you could have a kind of intervention mechanism that allows them to be employable in the public service, because in most instances, actually, the problem is more the experience. The private sector is reluctant to risk employing people who haven't had experience, and they want to be reluctant. Therefore, we're looking at the top-up course. We started engaging with the newly established National Development Agency, who has a database of these unemployed graduates, and they've been running the National Youth Service. And we're beginning to explore how this intervention that the minister has raised with us could link up with some of those initiatives, so that we do not start something from scratch, which is different from what has been done before. So that's the last point there. If we move on to the next area, those are some of the key developments that we've dealt with in the last year. I'll just mention 2 points. The first is on monitoring and valuation. The part of the new shift and new emphasis that we've seen is the establishment of the monitoring and evaluation ministry in the Office of the President. Now, implementation is a key issue, and for us to know whether we'll be able to deliver the services that government is supposed to deliver, we have to monitor and evaluate what we do. We've developed courses in that regard. By November this year, we hope to have 11 courses in place on monitoring and evaluation. We already have 4 that we've just newly developed, and we're rolling those out to about 1,500 officials. Now, that's the one emphasis that we're quite keen to make sure that as part of the current financial year, we deal quite strongly with. And the second issue is on gender mainstreaming, which is a program that we started rolling out in the last financial year. We take into scale this year. The unemployed graduate issue I touched on, so I will not go into detail on that slide. Except to say, one of the things that we're looking at, members will remember that there has been an intensive program in government in the past, and what we picked up is that, in fact, we are not very much knowledgeable as to the impact it has had. And we thought that part of this synchronization has to also link up with the lessons that we could extract from the successes or failures of the intensive program of government, and see how that could inform this barrier to entry intervention that we are looking at. We also have the third area, which deals with another priority area that the Minister has identified, which is the Mass-Wide Induction Program. Under the Provider Mobilization Branch, we recruit, we manage providers of training for junior and middle managers. So instead of competing with them, on the one hand, on the other hand, instead of us thinking we can do all the training that's required to be done, across the public service landscape, plus minus 1.4 million public servants, we feel that we need to take advantage of the expertise and the resource that resides in this country, in the provider landscape, whether it be FET colleges, whether it be private providers, whether it be higher education institutions, mobilize them to work with us in terms of training and management development of public servants. So we have a database of those training providers. We have a professional development framework that allows us to engage with them. We have what we call intergovernmental workshops where we engage with our provincial and local governments and academic colleagues in terms of making sure that we share in these databases and we share in these experiences. And we will be having a chairperson later in September. Our 13th Public Service Trainer Conference. I've not been mandated to invite members of Parliament, but I guess I can stretch my mandate and invite members to join us in September at the Public Service Trainer Conference on behalf of the Minister. We will also have monitoring and evaluation reports that we've been working on, which helps us to understand the provider landscape better. The second last point that I would like to make has to do with that rally point, the third rally point, which is the Mass-Wide Induction Program, which we've started rolling out. We had a secured special funding from the National Treasury of about 28 million, which has allowed us to run with that. We'll be reviewing the rollout of the program in October this year. Now, those are some of the challenges going on to scale. The point my colleague Rupert was making, in the past, for instance, you had about 6,000 PTDs, that the old family, for instance, you have to worry about. Now we are targeting for this financial year about 60,000 PTDs on induction training.
Thank you. And just to honorable members, I think mine would be just to make emphasis in ways and means by which Palama deliver on its mandate. It has already been mentioned that Palama works on collaborative approach, and as well the key is to ensure that there is massified outreach in terms of our program. So we have a branch that is dedicated in ensuring that linkages are established between potential and prospective users of our training programs, as well as providers in terms of the network of training providers. We are also putting priority in ensuring that there is a clear and easy access contact mechanism to Palama. And we have established the Client Contact Management Center, which is also an electronic system that supports the invoicing and certification of our program.
Apologies for the interruption. Sorry, I just wanted to concentrate some in terms of time. We definitely have a constraint, and I'm not very sure how much would you like to engage with us. There are some other items on the agenda. And like I'm saying, we're dealing with quite a number of other things, many things at the same time. That's some people also that we need to sort of adopt. If we can just be a bit of help on that side.
And then finally, on that slide, I think I can just put emphasis on the issue that other branches of which we have emphasis on the quality of our program, as well as ensuring that our programs as well, they are providing actual native value to the learner in terms of possibility of learning. And moving to the next slide,
moving to the next slide. I think then slide has been skipped, so I have to check where we are. What I think I need to emphasize on that slide is again another rider on our outreach mechanism, whereby we are now looking as well at establishing regional offices to get closer to the departments across the country. Currently, we are working on 3 regional offices. One of those has already been established here in Cape Town, and the next to come are in Limpopo and KwaZulu-Natal. I think for the sake of time, I have put my pointer on what I regard as most important on that slide. And moving to the next slide, what I want to emphasize is that in our measuring of our performance, we have looked at person training days as one of the key indicators in terms of saying, are we making the outreach we are looking at? And over a 5-year term, we are saying to ourselves, there must be at least 5 days training for a public servant within a financial year. And linked to that are the figures that we see combining the pie and the bar graph. The bar graph, they show in terms of these person training days at a national level and at a provincial level in terms of what outreach we have made so far. And the pie graph, it apportions the provincial outreach giving an allocation the province. I will take the numbers as read, but I think what I need to clarify is the small paragraph in terms of other, because that includes local government where we have already made outreach, and it also indicates outreach by calls from public entities, because even then we've made some training, and as well our support to the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo. And that takes us to our international activities, which are activities that are mainly influenced by South African government priorities in terms of our support to our neighboring countries. And I think one thing I need to emphasize there is that our manner of intervention in these countries is focused on ensuring that we develop capacity, we assist them, support them in terms of developing their own management development institute, so that over time we are able to graduate out of direct involvement in those countries. And I think another thing of importance to mention there is our draw of lessons from counter management development institutes. I'll make an example under the framework of ISTA, where we are working closely with India, Brazil, with India and Brazil. And I think I just need to explain the acronym there, ENA. That's the name of a management development institute in Congo, ENA. It was easy for me to say ENA than to use the French name, which is the full name representing ENA. Moving from that slide, for the sake of time, I think this slide is all points to what we primarily focus on in terms of our international support program. And as well, it also puts emphasis on that at a local government, we are now getting there with presence, focusing on improving service delivery and ensuring that there are proper systems for monitoring and evaluation. And moving to the next slide, in terms of governance, I think the issues of emphasis there is the role of this branch in terms of the development of the strategic plan, the annual reports, ensuring there is a proper governance and risk management framework within Palama, and as well as ensuring that over time we build a repeatable knowledge management resource center as a training institute. I'll try
try to rush through my presentation, and you will be happy to know that I'm almost at the very last end of my group of slides. But we felt we needed to share this slide with you because it shows what drives Palama in terms of the ethos for public service delivery. And Palama's building, where Palama is named after the veteran in terms of academic veteran and political veteran. That is one of the tenets for the Freedom Charter. Thanks. Over to you, Palama.
Thank you, Manjita, Acting Chair, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, and members of the committee. We're going to take you through, the two branches remaining in the structure, and then probably train the numbers. I think everybody's looking solicitor to hear. The Corporate Services branch mainly focuses on information technology, building and operations, and human resources. Under our human resource current development, we 92% filled our SMS structure, which is quite positive because then the next level, which is our administrators, will then be full and we can have our whole structure completed with our staff. In terms of information technology, we're busy with our whole enterprise-wide IT architecture, which is being developed and soon be implemented to ensure that all our systems are all actually under one roof. Our server infrastructure upgrade is also busy being implemented and to ensure that we have proper connectivity, especially in our environment and where we're going with e-learning as well. In terms of building and operations, the building at Palama is now able to sustain or house people of differently able, which was one of the big achievements for building and operations for our new building. Also, we're sitting with the heritage building on our site, which will be in place from 2010, which will then be our auditorium on our premises. If we look at the next slide, which shows our gender profile, shows the percentage of females in the organisation, which is currently sitting at 57%, which is above target of 50% for the organisation, and 40% for our female SMS members. The next slide shows our overall equity profile. What I'd like to highlight here is that we are having a 77% black and 23% white population. If we go to the following slide, which is corporate finance, which houses the financial management, accounting, and the supply chain services for Palama. In our current development, we are investigating a new financial accounting system to enable us to do proper graph reporting, where we all deviate from the normal standard BAS system, which is for the entities which is based on a cash basis of accounting. Our other government development is we've got an unqualified audit report for the past successive 5 years, not the current year, which is still in progress. We'll report that at the next meeting with the portfolio committee, as well as we've successfully implemented financial delegations in the organisation, which is enabling and empowering branches to do their own budget control. Chair, then I'll move over to the next slide, which is showing the numbers. If we look at the main slide there, I can point you to the surplus for the current year. This unaudited financial numbers that I'm presenting to you. Palama will be sitting with a 4 million rand surplus in our trading account. And if you look at the top end, the surplus and deficit for our both accounts is actually almost zero. There's been a very negligible underspending on our both accounts. For the 9-10 period, which is the current period going forward, we will be anticipating obviously a zero overexpenditure on our both accounts and a 1 million rand surplus for the trading entity. On those numbers, what I also like to highlight out to you on the 43 million is that we did retain 8.7 million from our transfer payment to the trade account. To complete a whole transformation process from them to Palama, there was additional expenditure that we had to pay out of the bank account. If we look at the next slide, this shows the actual appropriation of our bank accounts per economic classification, where you can see a subtotal of $64 million for the current year, which is under review on the current year, the 9th and then the 19th year, which will be $57 million. That gives us a total budget allocation from Parliament of $105 million for 08-09 and then $119 million for the current 19th year. We turn the slide to the next one. This shows our trading agency, our trading account, where you'll see the R4 million surplus that we will be that we're reporting currently for the current financial year, and then for the next 2 years, the R1 million surplus that we'll be reporting. I'd just like to highlight within our goods and services line item, that line item includes the cost of presenting the training. It's not a cost that's separately shown in our breakdown, but it includes the cost of actually generating our revenue. Jim, I'll hand over back to the DG.
Yeah, and I think I can really skip over the last few slides. One of them really extracts from everything members will have heard some of the key program developments that you'll be able to keep an eye on as we meet you on successive occasions, the Minister's priorities, other priorities from the program of action, and future priorities if the single public service legislation brings us into more intersection with the local government training entities. And then there's a slide, next one, that we'll have to send you. It's hot off the last night's aeroplane. We actually had plenty of time to travel because our aeroplane was sent back to Johannesburg. So we made another attempt early this morning, and those are kind of key deliverables which will circulate to the committee so that you can hold us to account over the years. And then lastly, the very last slide, that's our building. Next time we're going to say Tia Bolga in Tonga. And we do look forward to welcoming the committee on various occasions as our activities unfold. We're next door to the DPI, just off Nelson Mandela Drive, and we think we've really boosted the neighbourhood. Chair, thank you so much, and we're available, of course, for questions.
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much, and so many of you for us. I know it's unfriendly, and I hope you'll bear with us then. Honourable members, we do have a few things saying it's quite interesting. What I'll actually do is that maybe some of the questions may not take on the new details, but if there's any issues, we'll just quickly raise them. Should we just pass through the report first and then we'll take the questions thereafter? You know, it's a very important sort of pass-through report. I'm sure they were distributed to you. Those are the presentations that we had, the Department of Public Safety and Administration, and then the other one was for the Commission, the Public Safety Commission. So can the members quickly look into that? Part of the questions that on the road there, I'll come to if you need to want to finish this one. Can you just look into it? While they're still constituting a quorum. Let's start with the first by the rules. Okay. That is sufficient. We need some investment. Okay, can you start with budget vote number 10? I only remember to release this the copy. That is before you see things. I'll see by show of hands if that support can be approved. If there's any question you want to raise that we're able to approve.
Madam Chair, with the Minister of Such of the first 2 meetings, we have just elected the chairperson. That's fine, I propose that we adopt that. And the second one, we have the presentations by the department itself and then by the Public Service Commission. That's fine. I'm also happy to propose that we adopt those minutes. Then we've got 2 reports, drafts, sets where we say this committee recommends that we adopt the budget. I would just say, I don't think we're ready to do that in the year we want to reserve these rights on that.
Okay.
Sorry, Chip, was only second that was not the MC.
Okay. Both of them, huh? Okay. We'll then see them concurrently with the minister. Can we then proceed with the question? Another day? So the and then but also it's other questions, you can sort of try them and send them to Param. We need another round like Peter to actually engage with them. Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've just interrupted the Minister on his way out, which of course I think not really a question or comment, but I'd like him to hear that. I'm very encouraged by the presentation. And I think training, education and training, that's the key to building societies and social development and so on. So well done on good work, and we just need much more of it to enhance our society. I'm also very excited about the thing that the public service, or the Paloma specifically, is looking at creating entry jobs for unemployed youth, you mentioned specifically young graduates. That's very good and well, but I wonder if we can start even earlier and say, what do you offer bursaries to students, would-be students, and so with a view that they could, you know, they would sign a contract and they would serve a number of years in the civil service to work off their bursaries. I know long ago that was in our system in place, and I think that's something that could still be pursued. Also a career in public service, encourage young people to follow a career in public service. One question, a specific thing on page 34, human resources, you said that you handled 23,000 applications for vacant SMS positions. Was this across the civil service, all the parties?
No, just
that. Just you? Okay. That's the thing that I try to do.
But also, Minister, before you leave, then, I may not read all other things, we can read with Paloma, but I was looking at the cluster, this page, and I realized that the curriculum and material, in fact, the first one is a very good development, and then another one is curriculum and development, and under curriculum, the curriculum design, accreditation, quality assurance, e-learning. I'm looking at that to me. In the light, I understand the change in terms of from somebody to a speaker, which is appreciated. That seems like really how it has to happen. But now, what I'm asking myself, you know, in the light of having chief speaker, do we still have to have this unit, this line unit, or part of it also does quality assurance? I can understand that unit of quality assurance. Well, that would be to maintain quality assurance. You know, for instance, if you've got accreditation, maintain accreditation was to tell us at least that one. But the rest of it, you have to design the curriculum, accredit yourself. How do you see it? Well, to me, if you've got physical and health, that it appears as a good issue. Only that, Minister. The rest, I can learn with them.
Thanks, Chair. On the bursaries, I think we'll take that as a very powerful suggestion. I think tertiary bursaries are really covered by NSFAS, and we're hearing that the Minister wants to extend that, and it would be an idea to see if we can't get the share of those to support the barriers to entry program through the NSFAS program into the public service. That would be a nice collaboration. On the quality assurance, Mr. Mazur will very quickly.
Thanks, Chairperson, for raising that point. The four units, the e-learning you didn't raise, which is more the online issue. The one of the key shifts that we hope to push for in the new Paloma, which is different from what some used to do, we hope to move towards more and more accredited training programs. And we would hope that more and more public servants who attend our training actually receive certificates of competence instead of certificates of attendance. Now, currently, less than 10% of our programs are accredited. Now, when we look at the suite of courses that we currently have, about 112 courses that we currently have over on our menu, it means that almost all of them need redevelopment and therefore accreditation for public servants to get certificates of competence. Now, the accreditation unit that we have is dealing with the South African Qualifications Authority and the PCTA for them to accredit these programs. Now, we develop them, we ensure compliance with the public services CETA, and then submit them to the public service CETA for them to approve them. So the PCTA doesn't develop unit standards, for instance, doesn't ensure that their credits align to the South African Qualifications Authority. All that they do is to check that the programs that we develop are aligned for them to approve. We have now developed what we call a joint implementation plan with both the South African Qualifications Authority and the PCTA for this turnaround of cost and program development and accreditation and registration on SAPA for that turnaround to be integrated between the three institutions. Quality assurance deals also with the quality management systems within the organization. So, for instance, we have just completed the processes with our internal audit on, you know, how good are our training, education training development practitioners? What systems do we have in place there? And all these quality management processes, that some of them have an audit implication, are also dealt with there.
To summarize, that unit pre-processes stuff for PCTA. So it's a really close partnership, but we have to get it all ready and then we hand it over for their function to apply, similarly in relation to SAPA. And if it's a reassurance, our officers in both of them are people who used to be in PCTA and SAPA and are therefore helping get our stuff ready for them to take it into their machinery.
I mean, it's really the NISA, but definitely perhaps the coordination issues, you know, in terms of work, this kind of work, and especially maybe in the light of we haven't had an interaction with PCTA. Part of it maybe might be from both perspectives. Thank you. Any other questions from member? Okay, I have a different one.
Just a point of order, if we were all to confine our burning issue to one question, without prejudice, then maybe we could hear more of the parliamentarians, because the ratio of answers to questions is about 3-1 in terms of time. So we're just giving them another chance to present.
Okay.
Okay.
Any other questions?
So let's take one question from
each.
From each one. And
okay.
Actually, yeah.
I'm sure all of the members are agreeing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we've got about 4 answers to this question.
Thank you. This is something quite different. The impact of Panama's work is not experienced, always experienced at grassroots level. I was wondering, does the knowledge of the 8th Party Pelec principles, do they form part of the training process, as Palama said? You know, access, courtesy, especially courtesy, and in service standards, etc. The public really experiences the attitude of public service workers very negatively. Attitude training. I'm talking about attitude training.
Yeah, it's absolutely safe. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. In the presentation, you said that you didn't develop all of your training material. So what I'd like to know is what mechanisms do you use to make sure that the training that you do give is beneficial and relevant? And how much do you spend on external consultants who produce the training material for you?
Just very quickly, I think that the key question I want to ask is, who determines what skills are upgraded? Is it the state or is it the employee? Because you have unintended consequences with teachers, for example, all deciding to do their BS or their MS. And then it has an adverse reaction because they're out of the class most of the time going to university. Whereas what we may determine as a state that what teachers require training in is how to manage a school, how to be innovative in curriculum design and implementation. So I just want to say, ask whether the same is wagging the dog, or is Palama a big enough dog to shake the tail?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank you for your, from Congress, the deepest perspective for your presentation. One of my major concerns is, and I think it goes back to what the honourable member from the DA said, is how do you actually define, you know, your success, and how do you measure that success in terms of public representation and public experience? And I'm really concerned that when I see the material that I read, and I just take the material of reading the document that was placed in my pigeonhole because of ultimately I want to understand, how do you actually define the performance? What is the balance scorecard used within the organization or department in terms of defining who goes on training, who doesn't go on training? And then I think really what I'd like to see is, when you look at a skills database, that you find a way to have a virtual team internship program as well, because I believe in terms of public service and bringing new entrants in, because I see there's been quite a considerable job promise over the next few months from government, that those internships and those programs be put in place so that those individuals are retained and not lost. And the retention programs need to be set in place as well. So there's actually multiple things. There's about five issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Sure, our colleagues will take it in turn to make sure there's only one on.
Thanks, Chair. Honourable members and DG. I would like to focus two questions. The first one is that one which you remember is attitude training. That is part and parcel of our induction program. Previously, somebody used to train on average 3,000 to 4,000 officials per annum on induction, and the old induction program. But seriously, based on the work under Palama, we have developed a new interactive program on induction, which is a generic induction program compulsory for everyone, and it addresses this key issue of attitude. It's not about skills, it's not about political management, cost management, no. It's about what is government, what is the constitution, what is particular principle, how does it affect you as a public servant in relation to the person who receives the same from you. Therefore, that, through that particular program, I think we'll be able to change the country over time. The last financial year, within Palama, we covered over 22,000 people out of 30,000 employees in the country. This year, we are intending to do much more in covering everybody. The good thing is that this particular program is compulsory. I normally call it the mother of all programs, because it's a program which defines who or what is the public service. That's one part. The second part is, how do we define our success, or how do we, maybe to paraphrase it, how do we know that we are doing well in terms of our rollout of training programs? We've got three ways of doing it. First of all, given the fact that we are doing some programs directly in partnership with provincial academies or universities, etc., is our trainees or our participants in these programs give us feedback on our programs. That's why we are talking about qualitative and quantitative intelligence on how our products are doing. You also get support from the facilitator, but you don't leave out there from those two fronts. You also fund regular income after our on-site monitoring and evaluation efforts to ensure that the facilitators are being correctly and covering the outcomes which are intended in the particular program. And in the old family, we used to have what we call impact studies, but they were quite irregular. And most of them, they were done at least. Now, impact studies are going to be part and parcel of our program evaluation to check us wherever our training in various areas, technical skills and generic skills, are making an impact on the ground. And I think we will share those reports, we embark on them with the committee as they come. I don't know whether Mr. Pichavel wants to talk about the development of the chair.
Thanks, Chair. I'll respond to the two questions from Honourable Members Williams and Rasool, because they are related. The question of how to ensure that training is relevant and beneficial, I think it's related to the question of who determines what skills are upgraded. Now, that's the one area that we really think we still need to tighten up between ourselves and the PCT in particular. Because as the Honourable Members are aware, departments develop workplace skills plan, which then they submit to the PCT, which then is supposed to give us a profile across the public service of what skills the public service needs. Now that comes from the performance agreement with the personal development plan. Now that whole chain has not been as smooth as it should be, and therefore has not answered the question who determined what skills get upgraded. And I think that's an area we still need to tighten up so that we can define much more better that balance, which still needs, it's more, I think, of a balance that it needs to be found between employee interest, that public servant, and the state interest. And I think that's an area we will have to go away and think more carefully around tightening up. The legislation is there that allows us to tighten it up, but I think it's more around how we've been able to implement it that could be a problem. It cuts across the public service, unfortunately.
The last one, I know members also have to get a break before getting to the speaking. An honourable minister.
Thank you, Jefferson. Just a comment on, in addition to the question raised by Mr. Rasool. We talk of policy making. And it is in policy that as a state we define what we need to do. And it is in policy that as a state we define how we want to do what we set ourselves to do. Therefore, it is the responsibility of the state to therefore define and determine policy on training and intervention. If you look in terms of the white paper, that this with training, it is clear in terms of how we then say we need to move forward. In my previous life, Jefferson, as a member of this portfolio committee, we called Palama, GPSA, PSC to a round table. And at that round table, the issue that came out very clear was that, but now who set the direction and indicates the speed at which we should go in as far as training is concerned? And the answer came out very clear that as a political responsibility to the Minister of Public Service and Administration, broad policy in as far as training is concerned, that is where it actually has to be developed. So that you don't have entities picking and choosing in terms of what has to be provided. Because we have defined ourselves to then say this is what we want to do. If we said ours is a developmental state, then how do you strengthen that developmental state in terms of building capacity? So that's why we then say, for a training program to then be approved, that this has to be implemented, and I need to stress that word, to have been approved to them that this is what can have to be done. We need to first make certain assumptions. And what are those assumptions? And around those assumptions, then we then develop a training program. It is on that basis that, as Dr. Otim indicated, actually during the presentation, that we then say, we need training to build capacity to be able to respond in areas of need. One area of need which is critical is in financial management. And we will need to see our public servants empowered to deal with that. That's why we then said another area is this thing that you find in South Africa will talk of directly, who are not employable. You then said if you look at that from the public service point of view, are we not in a position to be able to provide whatever is missing in terms of the training of this graduate who are said to be or are so-called not employable? It is for that reason that we then said, Palama, you have a responsibility to deal with that. With TIPSITA and Palama, that's the point I wanted to address. Those are entities that in terms of the CITAS, as you know, for now, the responsibility of the Ministry of Labour at a certain extent and are on their way to higher education. But in terms of residents, TIPSITA finds itself as one of the entities that the Minister of Public Service and Administration have a role to play in terms of capacity. That's why coordinating between Palama and TIPSITA is like actually talking about two cattle that belong to the same cord. They easily get you to the voice of the shepherd. So that is what actually is going on in terms of this event. That's why you have this close relationship, so that the one fits into the other. They complement one another in as far as that is concerned. But generally, in terms of training, Mr. Rasul, as who says the talk, it may be that people have not yet acclimatized themselves in terms of what that is, but the answer is very clear that it's actually at that level. Thank you very much, Dr.
I think that was summing up, because I believe that it's a set of questions that are advised then, and to the department before. We don't have to, can I request Honourable William to follow up in a written form and interaction with the teacher? Because we are not, if we allow them to respond, okay, they'll have to respond.
Walk with him.
Yes, right. And I was like, I just want to before you leave. We are definitely involved in the process of the Public Service Commission. As the committee, we are definitely going to have follow-up dates, which will get the indications in the procedure mode in terms of the program and the procedures there. But definitely, as the committee, we will be informed and we will establish a team that will proceed. Honourable members, in that note, just indicating that, of course, the meeting starts on the 3rd, the committee will be doing the showcasing, but it will be some other activities of, the committee sitting at the committee in advance, prior to the 3rd, and then we'll be continuing that way. And I would really want to thank the speaker in absentia for the presentation, including Palama. Palama, you can see there's a lot of eagerness. We are really interested to know more. That's where the gist of training of skills within the public service is situated. And we really appreciate the knowledge that you have shared with us. I wanted to say, I've been here with Sister Sister, not too much of a father. But nonetheless, I think the minister is very afraid of me around with us. Well, there's one sister here, which I didn't get quite but I'm here now. And thank you very much, and surely we'll keep this relationship on an ongoing basis, because there is a need. And I can thank you.
Sorry, I'm in the paperwork on that.